I should know it by now. So welcome everyone to the Waltham Buddhist Meditation Group. This is our beginning, actually, of a new module. So you probably have looked online. We have started teaching in February. So we've done a couple different modules. So today we're beginning a new one. So before we begin, I wanted to thank some people for something really wonderful, which is our box back there. And Jerry's helped a lot to drive the pieces around. You were the wood driver. And James helped too. Where's James? There he is. James helped, and Michael built it and painted it and whatever. But the church was extremely accommodating, and there has been a lot of work figuring out where we were going to store the cushions. So I'm happy that we've got a good spot now. So thank you. Just to tell you again about what we're doing. So this is actually the book we're using. It's called Traveling from Confusion to Original Sanity, and it's an introduction to Buddhism, 111 in a series, Nalanda Bodhi study curriculum, and it's under the direction of the Dzogchen Khunlop Rinpoche, who teaches in Seattle, and I studied with him and went to that Sangha retreat several times. It's no longer in print, and so to make it easy, I just typed it, which was a lot of work, but I think it's, in the end, a good deal. So you don't have to pay for anything or buy it, because it is out of print. So we're going to be using that.
It's on our website.
And it's on our website. So it's a PDF, and you can download it, read it online, or do whatever you want, or get it printed. So we're actually going to be using just the first two chapters, at least for this particular module, and we may pick up and use the other two chapters later on. You'll find it under the Education tab, and it's module 4, and it's a PDF format. So in terms of this group, our intention is to, to basically present Buddhist teachings, and also to introduce you to living Buddhist teachers. So that's why when people come around to our area, to let you know who's here. In terms of lineage, that's a really important thing to understand. And we've been trained, the three of us, in the lineage of Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, who is a Tibetan meditation master. So that's what we learned, and so the teachings that we present are in the way that we learn these Buddhist teachings. So it's more because we've studied that way. We haven't so much studied Zen or other aspects of Buddhism, but those are also totally wonderful and valid traditions. So just to get a sense of the view and where we are within all of this. Yes, sorry?
How far back does that go?
How far back?
Yeah.
Well, in the 8th century is when Padmasambhava came into Tibet and brought the teachings. But the basic teachings go back to India, and that's now 2,600 years ago. And so the teachings were basically, the Buddhist teachers began in India and spread to many different areas throughout India, Southeast Asia, and into Tibet, and China, Japan. So there are many, many different places where Buddhism spread, and there's different lineages that developed and different strains of Buddhist teachings. So I'll say a little bit more about that as we go on, too. So within the Tibetan Buddhist lineage, the lineage that Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche held was the Kagyu and the Nyingma lineage. Those are the two that he held. And the Nyingma is called the old school, ancient school. So that was the oldest lineage in Tibet.
How long ago did he live?
That was in the 8th century.
Chogyam
Trungpa Rinpoche, he died in 1987. So
his teaching is fairly recent.
Yes, but his school
is very old.
Got it. So it's okay. He holds two lineages.
Right.
The Nyingma, the old school, the ancient school, and the Kagyu lineage. Those are the two that he held. And the Kagyu lineage is called the Ear Whisper lineage. It's passed on from teacher to student. But actually, all the lineages are. Is there another way we say that? The ear whispered, or there's actually another?
Actually, that's a little bit of a misnomer.
Oh.
But so Kagyu is basically Ka, it's like a command. And it's basically the command lineage, the lineage of the oral teaching, oral instructions, which are passed down. But the oral instructions are particularly in the Nyingma as well.
Yes.
When you go into Vajrayana practices, then the transmission from teacher to student and subsequent generations is all considered an oral tradition, oral tradition and transmission.
So the importance is then being in the presence of a teacher and receiving direct teachings. So that's really stressed. The Dalai Lama is the Gelugpa tradition, for instance. So slightly different emphasis. But the root of all the teachings is really the same. So it comes from the same root, then slightly different variations over time. So tonight, I'm actually not going to present the first chapter in the book. I wanted to give people a chance to find it if they didn't know we were doing that. So next week, we'll be starting that chapter. So tonight, what I want to present is really an introduction to Buddhist study and also an overview of the Buddhist path, just one part of that. So actually, if you have questions as we go along, feel free to interrupt me, because there's plenty of chance to actually ask questions, and you know, all the other teachers will answer too. We can work on things together as we go. So the first point I want to make is the importance of study and practice. So it's considered that study and practice go together, and they complement each other. So sometimes people think that when you learn Buddhism, you're just going to meditate and that's it, or you're just going to do mindfulness practice and that's it. But the study part is very important in terms of having a view and understanding of a bigger picture and a depth of understanding of the teachings. But without practice, the study just becomes academic, and there's no realization that really can come just from reading books. And it's really the practice of meditation that informs the study, and the study informs the practice. So they really work together. And up to now, we've done the first module we did, well, actually, the first two modules were by Pema Chodron. We used a book of hers. And then the third module that we just completed was on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. So that was also more of a meditation instruction. So mixing the study and practice actually gives us much more depth in our understanding. And your meditation practice will deepen through study, and the other way around too. Your study will deepen from the practice. So we're really moving into study in a very different way at this point. So you may want to bring a notebook and a pen. There'll be more material that you can actually read and think about and contemplate at home before you come in. So it's up to you if you want to take notes, or this handout is what I'm talking about tonight, but every teacher may not do it that way, so it's really up to you. So So I wanted to talk about what's called the three aspects of prajna. And prajna is a Sanskrit word, and it has many different meanings. But in this case, some of the meanings that apply here, the meaning of intellect or superior knowledge or highest knowledge or discriminating awareness. So prajna has to do with learning and study and sharpening of our ability to be precise in our study and the way we learn. So it's said that there are three aspects of prajna. And the first is called hearing. So these are traditional ways it's described. But hearing, it goes way beyond just hearing someone talk. Obviously, the beginning teachings, there were no DVDs, there were no recordings, there wasn't even anything written. So the Buddha spoke and people heard. So that's beginning to, a body of knowledge was developed from directly hearing the teachings of the Buddha. But now we've got all these other tools, which is extremely fortunate. The fact that you can hear a teacher's voice long after they've passed away is pretty remarkable. And we have things that were never available to people in the past. And you don't even, you know, you can be thousands of miles away from these teachers and still have access to them through live streaming, which is just phenomenal. But still, seeing the teacher is really, really important too, because there's something about being in the presence of a teacher where you actually see someone and make a connection. And I do believe it's very karmic and individual in terms of how people find a teacher and make a connection. So that's why we want to present to you different options, so you might have a chance to find the person that you make the strongest connection with. So, again, hearing is the body of knowledge, then, the teachings from the Buddha directly from 2,600 years ago, and also commentaries and explanations. All of that was developed throughout time. And again, it's not just hearing through your auditory sense, but also using all your senses. And studying and learning, of course. And then the second aspect of prajna is contemplating. And contemplating is more directly thinking about the teachings and really asking yourself, what does this mean? And being able to really chew on it and digest it. And I think for many of us, this is something that we haven't really worked with as much as in school. You would hear something from the teacher, and then you'd, you know, you would take a test and just regurgitate the material, perhaps. But the prajna of contemplating is extremely important, and this is the way that we actually can deepen our understanding of the teachings. What I love about Buddhism is you don't have to believe anything you're told. In fact, you shouldn't believe anything you're told. You should really investigate it for yourself and figure out if it's true for you. So really everything that you hear it doesn't mean a lot until you really think about it and make it real for yourself. And that's why it has to be joined with your own intellect and with your meditation practice as well. So critical mind is really important. Again, I don't take anyone's word for it, so I think that's true. and you analyze, you have to analyze on your own, think for yourself. And we're talking about, it's said to be sharpening the sword of prajna, and that prajna is that the sharp intellect that actually becomes stronger when you digest the material and think about it. And in Tibet, there's a tradition of debate, and I'm sure the students here that have come from that culture, it's very interesting to see primarily the monks debating, and they stand facing each other, and one asks a question, and the other answers, and then they slap, right? It's
they
pretty.
What?
They slap. Do. They slap. I don't know if
when
you could.
A point.
They're making a point. They
clap their
they
own
clap
hand.
Their hand.
Yeah, no,
their own hand. They clap their own hand.
Like I got.
And they
got
make.
You.
Yeah, they make a point. So then someone else answers, right? There's a debate going on. It's a debate, right?
Yeah.
Do you want to describe that a little more?
Yeah, you did it well.
Oh. I've only seen it in videos.
Yes.
But basically, again, they're debating, and they're not accepting. They're just, they make
right.
points, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
then they have to come from their own understanding. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay.
Basically asking philosophical questions, the contents are mostly about Buddhism,
mm-hmm.
Buddhist concepts.
Mm-hmm.
So they finally come up with their own answer, or they go deeper, pretty deeper.
Right,
yeah.
right. So they'll come up with something, and
yeah.
then the other person that's questioning them will ask another question,
yes.
a deeper question.
Yeah.
So that makes you keep thinking, going deeper into the material and thinking about it. Yeah. So that's foreign to our way of study, but actually, it's really great in a discussion group because people can just raise whatever questions they want, and other people can, everybody can answer. It's not like any one person has the right answer necessarily. So contemplating, again, is really important. And I think for myself, that's one area I just never really worked with as much as reading and then sort of showing up and expecting someone to tell me something. So we're kind of used to that style. But it's really, I just keep stressing this because it's a different way. And I think by putting in the effort to really think about something, you get a lot more out of it.
Are there guidelines, like, I'm thinking when I teach, I always think of, if you ask a good question, like you said with these debates,
mm-hmm.
it helps you to contemplate, like just to read something.
Mm-hmm.
You read it, and like you said, we don't have that habit of questioning.
Right, right.
It's almost like I've had the questions, like, okay, you've just read this, so what about this, I think that would... That's a way to provoke you to, think about what you read. So.
Right. And sometimes we do have questions, and I was thinking, sometimes if you get study questions with material, so some of us may want to put that up that way, or students could write their own study questions and post them even. We can
mm-hmm.
maybe find ways of doing that and sharing those questions. Or you just can ask yourself the questions. So... I think I was thinking myself about, the question even for the next class, the title of that is called The Path is the Goal. So I was going to ask people to think about that and come back next week with what does that mean, The Path is the Goal, and why is that the title of this particular chapter? So, again, it would be like, thinking for yourself, asking yourself questions. If someone was going to ask you, what did you read, and what were the main points? So again, it's kind of figuring out how to go deeper yourself.
I mean, it depends on what religious tradition you're from. I mean, with my Jewish upbringing, and especially in high school, you were supposed to question and discuss everything. It was
yes.
all open. So, is there a God? What do we mean by this?
Right.
Yeah. You don't have to be Jewish. You don't have to believe in God to be Jewish. Oh, you do. Oh, you don't. Well, what is it? You know. So I was really brought up with that challenge these statements and
That's,
discuss them. So this sounds very familiar.
Right. I see. So it's very interesting. I'm going to Brandeis now and taking the lifelong learning courses. So I'm in classes with mostly Jewish people, and I realize
they're not shy. Are they?
They're not shy. They're not shy, and they debate and argue all the time, and they come from this tradition. And I'm realizing that wasn't my tradition at all. You would never challenge anyone. No one discussed anything at the dinner table or argued about anything. And I'm thinking, there I am, and I'm thinking people have such a different tradition. And I realize you have a whole different way of learning when you're debating in that way and discussing things. So I think, you know, people come from very different traditions, and it's really helpful to learn different approaches.
There is a tradition in the West of critical thinking.
Yeah,
and it's very strong actually,
mm-hmm.
and it embraces. Generally, when you're not in an institution which authority is supposed mm-hmm. to be the chief guiding light, but actually, you actually are the value of going to the traditional value of a liberal education is to teach you. You can learn how to think. You can actually learn how to ask questions. You can. You don't simply go there and then come out with a diploma and forget about this. It's more like everything. Then your whole life is supposed to become an unfolding mm-hmm. process of questioning and exploring and. Gaining an understanding, or you may not gain an understanding, but at least you're willing to live with questions and you're willing to pursue them.
Yeah, that's helpful. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't really. I went to a state college, and there was big classes, and you just got your material, you took your test, and I didn't even have seminars. So here I am with all these people that have had all these seminars and debates in this way, and it's very revealing for me. So it's a challenge. So I think, we all step into new territory. So thank you.
I don't think it's typically understood at all that this is an aspect of Buddhism. I don't think it's in the common understanding of Buddhism at all.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a, you're not obliged to bow down to authority and mm-hmm. in fact encouraged to question.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting.
Yes. Yeah. No. Well, that's why I'm stressing. I've said it probably 20 times already, but that's why I'm stressing this, because I think this is a really important point. And especially like Dzogchen Tonglap Rinpoche, there are a lot of lawyers in that group. It's very interesting. They really go to him because they stress this analytical meditation and study. When you get into non-self, like, why do you think you have a self? And what is that? And there's a whole way of analyzing. It blew me away. But then I look around, they're all lawyers. Now I know why they're all here. But again, it's very powerful. It's a very powerful way of learning. So we're in this group, we're going to mix our meditation practice with study. And using our critical mind. So the third point of prajna is meditating, or meditation. And gom, I believe, means, that's a Tibetan word,
yes.
Recollection. It means recollection or remembering.
Kind of trenpa. Focusing.
Focusing?
Yeah.
Focusing.
Trenpa is recollection.
Trenpa. Trenpa. So gom is our gomden, and that means a seat of meditation. So we're focusing on our mind and working with our meditation. So this is the third aspect, and when we're talking about meditation, when we're talking about that in the aspect of prajna, we're talking about taking it into your heart completely. So taking this knowledge into your heart, and this knowledge becomes workable. So it's not just a concept, but you've joined it with your meditation, and it's applied. I think that's the point. So what you learn is actually applied knowledge, and that's why the meditation part's really important. So as you meditate, your meditation changes, and you could say that you develop greater awareness. We begin with mindfulness and focusing, concentration, and that meditation practice opens slowly into a greater awareness. And that, from that point, that awareness, that's called vipassana in Sanskrit, then also more prajna, or awakeness in the world, actually unfolds. So our intellect comes along with that as our meditation develops. So they really work together. And again, that's something you will experience. And again, it's great to work with a meditation instructor so you can talk about how your own practice is developing, and that's really helpful. So any questions about these three aspects of prajna? My question here is, well, what are we studying? You know, what are we studying anyway? We say we're studying Buddhism. We're studying the Dharma, and the Dharma has many definitions. One is the teachings of the Buddha. We talk about the Dharma as being the teachings of the Buddha. It's also the development of peace or passionlessness. And that doesn't mean that you give up passion or emotion of... It doesn't mean you're giving up your enthusiasm for things, but it just means there's less grasping and fixation and attachment. So it's used that way too, as Dharma. And it's also said to be cosmic law, or the way things are. And one expression is as it is, and that's just the way things are. So in a way, it's without a translation. That's almost without any translation. And another meaning is phenomena. So you can talk about Dharma as phenomena, things as they appear in the world. Is there anything you want to add to that, Michael?
Well, you'll encounter this word Dharma in many ways. It's also a doctrine.
Doctrine. Mm-hmm.
And also the word you use for phenomena is chö in Tibetan, and it refers also to any kind of discrete kind of element or topic or factor that you might. So you'll encounter this term if you're reading Buddhist literature in many different contexts, and usually the context explains itself. So if you say, you know, we're encountering many dharmas, it means we're encountering a lot of different elements in the teachings that are actually, that might be a consideration. It's something that sort of, as you encounter it more and more, you'll see how it sort of sifts out according to the context.
Mm-hmm. It's used in many different ways.
Is it synonymous with the path?
It's more how the world works is Dharma. Mm-hmm. How phenomena behaves.
Path is the called lam, the way to, in practice, way to gain enlightenment. So path is different.
What's
the
relationship of the Dharma to the path?
It's a good question.
Well, Dharma is the teaching, and the path is the application. So the path has many different, there's a lot of different teachings, and there's a lot of different elements to the path, from the fundamental teachings, the core teachings, the Four Noble Truths, the what we call the first turning of the Dharma, which teaches us about the futility of fundamental ego-oriented life, and the possibility of recognizing that kind of life is basically the cause of suffering. And then we discover that through that there's a means to work through that, and that's the path that we can actually find a way to liberate ourselves from suffering. But it's very common, you know, we can get into a big question, big answer about this, but the path is going to be your engagement with the actual teaching.
So you used the word lam for
lam. So actually we're going to talk a little bit more about that tonight in terms of the path. Okay. Oh, that's where we're going now. Here we go. So, let's see. So the next part is something called the Three Yana Journey. And this is a Tantric Buddhist schema. So just to know, what we have studied is this breakdown of the path as these three yanas. And yana means vehicle. That's the translation for that. So Hinayana is called the lesser vehicle. And it doesn't mean lesser because it's not important. This path is very important, and it's a foundational path. It means lesser because it's the path of individual liberation. So this is a foundational path, and the means of this vehicle, you could say, we're walking on this path step by step. So vehicle is a wonderful word. So we can think of the Hinayana is walking. I mean, you're doing it yourself. You're working yourself. You're working on yourself. But the Hinayana is called the lesser vehicle or the path of individual liberation. And the second yana is called the Mahayana, or the greater vehicle, which is the path of working with others. So you could think of that vehicle, the road. I also think of the road as wider, but the technical thing is it's the vehicle. So you could think of it, you could say it's the magic bus. I made that up. It's not part of the teachings.
The Buddha's
the magic bus, I think, is perfect. So it's bigger, you could say. This vehicle is bigger. Maha means great, a greater vehicle. And the Vajrayana, which was really emphasized in Tibetan teachings, which doesn't appear as much in some of the other lineages, is the indestructible vehicle. So Vajra means, sometimes translated as diamond or adamantine, indestructible. So it's, you could say, the jet plane. It's the quick path. I think Pono Fermishe calls it the jet plane. Oh, he has a wonderful analogy. So he talks about going down the highways, and there's actually the fast lane has a diamond in it. Have you ever seen that on the far left lane? So he always jokes about that, that the left lane is the diamond vehicle, the fast path. So the Vajrayana is considered the fast path or the quick path because it has particular skillful means that bring you to enlightenment quicker. But it's also considered more dangerous because of that.
Freebasing.
What's that?
Freebasing.
Freebasing. That sounds like a drug term. We'll go on. No, I get it. So that's just a tiny little, you know, thumbnail sketch, not even a thumbnail, just a drop. But I wanted to just give you that view of where we're working and where we are. So this fall course is going to be based on the Hinayana teachings. So we're starting at the beginning in terms of these teachings. So what are the characteristics of Hinayana? So there are considered to be three trainings or three disciplines. And those are, the three trainings are discipline, meditation, and prajna. So the first one is discipline, and that can include behavior, ethics, morality. So if you think about the monastic framework, that's a good way to sort of see how this got started. These are the rules of behavior So initially, when the Buddha taught, he taught to the Sangha, which is a monastic Sangha, and the monastic Sangha had many rules of discipline and behavior. So for us as non-monastics, it would be thinking about simplifying your life instead of saying, I never have time to practice because I'm too busy. It's really thinking about your life and how you use your time. Do you have time? When do you have time? And how can you actually structure your life so that you can engage in the path of Dharma? So it's making time for practice. The other aspect is reducing desire. It doesn't mean you, you kind of shut down your life as it is, but you're more aware of where your desire takes you and what distractions it leads you into. So you're focusing more on what's important and paying attention to how you use your time. Another way of thinking of the discipline aspect is not being a nuisance and not causing harm. So it's a path of really working with yourself and being aware of how you interact with other people. Also becoming more gentle is an aspect of that. And also caring for your world, having a view, paying attention. You know, if there's garbage in front of you, you can pick it up. You know, whatever, by paying attention to your world. Within the Hinayana discipline, one aspect is commitment. I didn't put that down. And taking refuge is a path of the beginning path within Hinayana in taking vows, you could say beginning vows, in terms of becoming a Buddhist. And in that case, the refuge is taking refuge in the Buddha as the teacher, as the example, the Dharma, again that word Dharma, as the teachings of the Buddha, and the Sangha as the community. I didn't put that down on your paper, but well, there'll be more on these things later on. So taking refuge is formally stepping onto the Buddhist path. The second aspect of the Hinayana is meditation. And we've talked about shamatha or shine, development of peace, and also vipassana. We haven't talked about that as much. That's laktong, I think. Laktong. Vipassana? Yes. Is that right? Does that sound right?
Laktong.
Laktong.
Laktong. Laktong. Laktong.
Yeah. Okay. And that's awareness. So this is more expansion or view. And we haven't really emphasized that as much, and we'll be going into that more as
clear
we go
seeing.
Along. Clear seeing.
Yes,
thank you.
Actual translation.
Clear seeing. So in our meditation practice, we first settle down. We learn to sit on the cushion or the chair, and we work with taming our mind and working on ourself, working on our mind. And in over the summer, we worked with the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. So this was an introduction to some teachings around the meditation practice itself. And if you remember, that was mindfulness of body, mindfulness of feeling, mindfulness of mind, and mindfulness of sense perceptions. So those were the four that we worked with over the summer. So again, it's the meditation is how we tame our mind. And then the third... Yes?
When you say development of peace, in personal, internal peace?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yes, because we are working with what takes us away all the time. When we're sitting down on the cushion and we're just noticing our thoughts as they arise and coming back to the breath, we're noticing how often we're gone from that, that open, spacious quality too. So it's the development of peace, of being aware of this fundamental nature that we all have, and that open, spacious quality that we can tap into at any time. Does that make sense?
But
yeah, go ahead.
I wonder about the word tame your mind, or the word tame your mind.
You wonder.
Just because there's this vision of there's one part of it where you take something that's out of control, and you make control, but there's a way that you think about like a wild horse,
mm-hmm.
and you tame it and make it do what you want. And I mean, and it's good and it's bad. Like, the good part is you get the horse to do what you want.
Uh-huh.
The bad part is maybe that's not what the horse wanted.
So there's also a contradiction all along, because the tamer has to be mind as well as also, right?
Right, yeah, that's the object. That's where it's kind of true.
So we can only start with that, and we start with lots of precautions about gentleness, right?
Right.
It's not about beating horses.
No.
And eventually we have to go beyond that, because, of course, the horse and the tamer are not different.
Right.
So we're going to have to go beyond that, but we have to start somewhere, because we start by believing we're separate things.
Okay.
Right. And that's actually, the horse is a good image, because you can think of a giant, you give the horse a giant field, a wild horse. You're not going to put it in a tiny pen to start off with. You'll never tame it. You'll make it crazy. So you have a big field. In a way, that's how we start with meditation. You know, we're not saying you're beating yourself every time your mind wanders. We would be crazy. So then you take the horse, and eventually you have a lunge line, and you attach it to the horse, and the horse runs around the circle. That's my understanding of how you tame a horse. You start to bring the horse more towards this central point. And they're moving around, but they actually are on a lunge line, so they're attached. And then little by little, you can bring them in, and eventually you can actually ride the horse. And if you've ever seen those Japanese pictures of the bull and the person it's the same image in a way, who first they're basically, the bull is pulling them along, and then eventually they get close to the bull, and then they're taming this animal, and then they ride the bull. So that's an image of basically being able to ride. Your mind isn't crazy anymore and wild, but you're able to bring it to one point and stay there.
But the last image is no rider, no bull.
No rider, no bull. That's
actually
the end. No rider, no bull.
After you've done that, then you can go to the no rider, the bull.
Okay.
That's no bull. Thank you, Mike. Good. A little humor. That's important, too. Humor. That's a sign of development on the path.
We're going crazy.
All right. So what else do I have here? We have a few minutes left here. So taming your mind, that's what we're working with. So prajna, here again, we're using it in terms of intellectual view. I think I just wrote view, but on my paper I have intellectual view, thinking it further. So as Michael Fagan mentioned, so we're going to begin with the core teachings, and those are the Four Noble Truths. We're going to be talking about that. That's what we're going to work with next. And the Four Noble Truths are basically working with understanding suffering. Life is suffering, and looking at the cause of suffering, and the cessation of suffering, and the path. So these were the first teachings the Buddha gave, and that's where we begin, with suffering. It sounds depressing, but it's not good that bad.
Get the suffering over with first.
Good idea.
But we have parties too, you know
exactly.
That, right?
Exactly.
It's not all that grim. We do have parties. So remember that the second Friday of every month is a party at my house. So if you...
That's association. So.
That's association. You can come. So if you want a notice on that, let me know and I'll put you on that secret mailing list. So be sure to let me know because the parties are important. So the aspects of this, we're going to explore what is suffering and the cycle of suffering. Looking at the key thing here is the development and maintenance of ego and looking at how we stay hooked in this cycle of suffering. We'll look at the path of individual liberation and how we can travel on it. So those are the three main characteristics of the Hinayana path: discipline, meditation, and prajna. Or sila, samadhi, and prajna, I think.
Or discipline, okay. You have the words for them?
In Tibetan.
Sultram?
Yeah.
Gom. Yeah. And sherab.
Sherab.
Mm-hmm. And individual salvation.
Sosatarpa. There we go. Sosatarpa.
Sotar.
Oh, okay. Sotar. That makes sense. I never heard that. Sotar. Good. All right. So next week, does everyone know how to find the teachings online, the book? So read the first class. It's called Class 1. And again, ask yourself questions. What's the title mean? The path is the goal. And try to have some understanding of ground, path, and fruition. And that's also a very classic way of working with Buddhist teachings. Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche always taught that when a talk is presented, to look at it through that lens of the ground, the path, and the fruition. So we'll be talking more about that next time. But it's really helpful if you can contemplate that a little bit and look at the material that way. It's laid out exactly like that. So does anyone have any questions? This is really kind of a big brush stroke of the introduction to study and a little bit in towards where we're going.
How many weeks will this be?
Boy, that's a great question. We have it's very interesting with this particular group, and the fact that we have freedom to structure it. We're not studying. We're not like squeezing to somebody else's curriculum. So we basically make decisions based on where we are each week in the class. And if we need to spend 3 weeks on one chapter, we do, because if we're not getting it or there's more to talk about, we don't have to move on. So initially, I kind of laid out two modules with this book for these chapters and also another book that I thought of for another module that would take us to Christmas, basically, through the fall, and right before Christmas. But now we may just stay with this and incorporate these teachings that we need to put in, especially with the cause of suffering, which is really a lot to talk about. Ego. What's ego? And there's a lot to look at and understand, not just it means non-self, it means blah, 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 but how does that feel to you personally? So it takes a long time for some things to penetrate. So to answer your question, I guess I'd have to say I don't know. And we're going to be on the Hinayana.
That's a good answer.
So we're going to work with the foundational teachings and the Four Noble Truths, and they're noble because they're really important teachings. So we're going to dig in, and we'll be introducing different aspects of these to expand our knowledge. and understanding. So you could just say that at least through the fall we'd be working with Hinayana teachings. And then, I don't know, we might introduce then, we may decide we want to work with Mahayana again next spring and do that way. I don't know. If we get really tired of suffering, we're going to have to move on.
Well, we're going to go to the cessation of
suffering. Oh, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. That's the foundation and, for the next one.
And, the path. All right. So any further questions? Anything else? Okay. Great. Yes?
How does the shamatha enter it?
Shanka? Oh, in Tibetan, Shine. Shine.
Shine.
Okay.
Did you figure it out?
Okay. We know something.
We can start to. We can find Tibetan spellings for all of these.
Yeah, we have the spellings.
Yeah, because we do have some good
resources.
Yeah, mm-hmm. resources to do that.
Mm-hmm. And we can start bringing those words as well as the Sanskrit words. So you have a reference point there too. Okay. Okay. So we'll dedicate the merit. Which is under here somewhere. Okay, here we are, thanks. Yes. Oh, thank you.